Welcome to the first ever episode 240 of the Kind of Funny Games cast. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Alio.
I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Yeah.
You actually have information I want to know.
Oh, wow. That's upsetting. I mean, yeah. I usually come in here a lot of things to talk about.
And you do.
A fan of those games, though.
Yeah. Huh. No. Big fan of this one, though. Very excited here. Last of Us 2, ladies and gentlemen.
We're going to hear that. Put some respect on the name.
And we have a very, 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 very special guest today. Kind of Funny up-and-comer, Blessing Jr., at Blessing Jr. on Twitter. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
The first ever Gamescast with the three of us. The first show. Well, I guess we did a Kind of Funny podcast as well.
But Nick was there.
Yeah, we had Nick dragging it down. Nick and Andy being like, oh, the
Reels. Yeah.
Us three talking about games, though.
Yeah.
It's what we do best.
Stuff.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's fun, man.
This should be real cool.
How's the week been going for you?
It's been going pretty good. I think I realized very quickly that being on a lot of shows is kind of tiring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because like halfway through Monday, I was like, oh, man, like I'm starting to feel it. And then by Tuesday, I was like, yeah, I'm getting there. And by yesterday, especially with the studio being super hot, I think it was halfway through We Have Cool Friends where I was like, I don't even know where I'm at anymore.
So far, you were on Kind of Funny Games Daily on Monday with Greg Miller. Greg hosted and you did it. Tuesday, you did Games Daily with you hosting with Xavier Woods.
Yes.
Wednesday, you did Games Daily with Greg hosting and you again.
Yes.
Thursday, which is today as of recording, you did Games Daily with Per Schneider, GM of IGN.com.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, you got your boy Alex Van Aken from OK Beast coming to do that.
Yep.
And that's just Games Daily.
Then on top of that,
you're doing Gamescast with us. You did the Kind of Funny podcast with all of us. You did We Have Cool Friends with Greg Miller that's going to go live in a couple weeks.
Yep.
You two went to GameSpot. What did you guys do there?
We did GameSpot After Dark.
Yeah.
Wow. It's fantastic stuff. Am I missing anything?
I'm going to be on Screencast.
He's going to be on Screencast on Friday. You popped by in review.
Yes, I did.
As Professor
McGonagall. No, it wasn't me, actually.
It wasn't you.
No,
yeah. Yeah. Professor McGonagall made an appearance.
We get mixed up a lot.
Chill. Yeah. Chill, Professor McGonagall.
Yeah. Did you see that, Greg?
Of course I did. I orchestrated all that. I was playing his schedules. I was helping out with McGonagall's.
You got to love it, man. You got to love it. But anyways, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Kind of Funny Games cast. Each and every week, we get together to talk about video games, all the things that we love about them. You can go to YouTube.com/kindoffunnygames to get this show every Monday when it goes live. But if you want to get it early, you can go to Patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. You can get it early. You can get it ad-free. You can even watch along with us live as we record it and get the pre- and post-shows that are exclusive to Patreon people. If you want to just listen to us, that's cool too. Just search for Kind of Funny Gamescast in your favorite podcast service. Shout out to our Patreon producers for this month, Tom Bach and James Hastings, making all this cool stuff happen, including the Up and Coming program. All this, we only were able to bring you out here for a week and do all this stuff because of you guys' support. So
thank you guys.
Thank you very, very much. Has it been worth it so far?
100%. I mean, I didn't have to pay anything. So yes, it has been worth it.
Hell yes, man. Gotta appreciate that. Today we're sponsored by Movement and HelloFresh, but I don't want to take any longer before we get to talk about The Last of Us Part 2. Greg.
Hi, Tim.
Give me the story. Lay the land.
I'll start at the top. I cannot envision what any other game will have to do in 2020 to beat this for Game of the Year.
I already got chills.
I want to go to my Twitter here, twitter.com/GameOverGreg. Everybody should give me a follow. Today I tweeted the following. After playing Last of Us Part 2 this week, I have no earthly idea what any other game could do to be Game of the Year 2020, but I'm excited to see them try. In the comments, this is, of course, a spicy tweet. You know what I mean? A lot of responses there. People coming off the bench wanting to fight for Cyberpunk, including someone quoting my tweet from me that I put out on June 12th, 2019, that reads this. Cyberpunk 2077 is unlike any video game I've ever seen. If the quality of the two demos I've seen is consistent throughout the entire game, it's going to win every award it possibly can and become so many people's favorite game of all time. Obviously, that is an accurate tweet for me. This is an accurate tweet for me. These are feelings as they evolve and change. The reason, and of course, Cyberpunk 2077 is going to be an immaculate game that I can't wait for. I have not played Cyberpunk 2077. We've seen two lengthy demos at E3 behind closed doors, enjoyed them. Can't wait to play that game in April. The difference for me with The Last of Us, and it might be cheating because I've played The Last of Us, and that's a different thing, versus Cyberpunk 2077 is feeling. It is the fact that we played two separate demos. It took me about 2 hours to get through them, right? Two different portions. One is called Patrol. One is called Suburbs. Patrol, and if you've watched the trailer, you've seen lots of footage from this. Patrol is the winter section that you saw with Ellie in the snowstorm, Ellie walking around with Dina. Suburbs is the summer section in the suburbs of Seattle. Very hot, Ellie in the short sleeve shirt. Both of those worlds are so realized and so well presented that as I'm playing Patrol and stomping around the hills here of Jackson, Wyoming, right? It's snowy, all this stuff. And I'm crunching on the ice and watching it break, the stiff snow break, leave the nice horse trails, you know, throughout the snow, walking my horse off the beaten path into there's evergreens here with snow on the branches, walking the horse into to see if it would actually happen, run into the branches, see the branches dynamically move on my horse, shed their snow on my horse, put it on the floor. I feel cold. I start thinking of when it is Chicago, when I see Ellie rubbing her hands and exploring and doing stuff and taking deep breaths and coming out with the steam, right? I think about when you're in the burbs of Chicago in a cold ass winter breathing in and it burns your chest, right? In the same breath when I'm playing hours or an hour later in the suburbs of Seattle, it's this, you can just tell, thick summer humidity. It's hot out there, right? Just from the way the grass is moving, the way the sweats are on her, the way you're about to go into it. Of course, that's the literal feeling it's making me feel in terms of these environments, which is not why I'm hanging my hat that this thing blew me away, that this thing I think is so far and above and beyond what other video games are doing here. It's that then paired with everything you'd expect from Naughty Dog to the next level. The fact that I have never played Tim, and I don't say this lightly, and I don't, and I know that I throw around hyperbole on a bunch of different shows. I've never had a gameplay experience this intense, period, end of statement, to the point where in the suburbs, the patrol in the beginning, and I'm sure you've read a million different previews and seen all sorts of footage, Naughty Dog, as we were going live here today, just put out a 9-minute video talking about behind the demo that's awesome and you need to go watch it. It's got Kurt, Neil, Haley, everybody's over there talking about the game. The snow section with Dina is very much... And have you read anything today, Tim? Because like I know we haven't talked about it, but I don't even know how much you know about
it. No, I've been waiting.
So you've seen the State of Play trailer?
Yes.
Great. So that first section of patrol in Jackson, walking around with Dina, right? You're out patrolling. Like, you know, it's a pretty mundane life for them here. They, you know, they live in this walled community. It's the morning after the kiss from E3, the barn trailer we saw there, right? And so this is where you get what you expect The Last of Us to be on a story level and character level, where we are walking around, we are exploring sections, we're checking for things, we're picking up notes, we're finding this, similar to the Ishmael story, we're finding out about this character named Boris and what's going on in this neighborhood that is now, you know, dilapidated and everybody's been gone for 25 years or whatever. You're also getting, though, the underpinnings, right, and storyline you'd expect from Naughty Dog and Ellie and based on the kiss, right, of it is very much that authentic experience we've all had of I'm with somebody and we've shared a moment, but I'm not sure how much that moment meant to them. I'm not sure if I'm misreading the situation. I like them. Do they like me?
How are they showing that? Is Ellie talking to the characters?
It's just you and Dina. It's just Ellie and her. So you're having conversations, and you're getting a whole bunch of awesome stuff. Like, I got there and squeezed in. One of the new things, of course, with this game is pushing forward on the stick and pressing X. You can squeeze into nooks and crannies or whatever that help you escape other people and creatures, obviously, but also help you explore. Squeezed into a motorhome here, was rooting around, found some stuff, was talking to Dina, and she's like, well, what are you going to do tonight, right, after all this? And Ellie is like, you know, I think I'm going to go, me and Joel were talking about watching a movie, and they start talking about different movies. Then you get into this great conversation of like, do you think people are still making movies? And Ellie's like, well, you know, if there's a camera, I'm sure somebody is. I have a guitar, I'm still writing songs. And then Dina has this genuine moment of like, wait, you're telling me there's original Ellie songs and I've never heard them? Why? And like, you're having this, like, clearly they're friends, or, you know, they've been on this precipice of what is their relationship, and they're feeling that out. And there's a great moment where Dina is like, come with me, I want to show you something cool. Gets this beautiful overlook, shades of the giraffe part from Last of Us 1. Not that impactful, obviously, for me as somebody who's just playing in, you know, 30 minutes, 20 minutes of the game at this point. But you get there, and it's an overlook, right? And Dina says something, and Ellie does the classic thing we've all done of, I'm going to try to say something cool, and it does not work. And Dina's like, okay, and walks away, and Ellie just looks off, and she's like, shit. You know what I mean? Like, they're communicating all of this in the subtleties of the facial animation, the conversations, the way you're talking, the way you're acting.
Is this all in a cutscene, or is this also interspersed with gameplay?
It's interspersed with gameplay. The motorhome and that whole conversation is us walking around exploring. Cutscene when we get to the overlook there, but again, in and out of it really, really quick. None of that, like, you know, we're hung up or this is what it is. And this continues on. You saw in the trailer, of course, where Ellie with the gas mask on, Dina with the gas mask on, she falls through the roof, right, onto the floor. This is the first part of, I would say, real gameplay in terms of like, okay, cool, we've been playing just walking around, which I love, obviously. You know, I'm a big fan of walking simulators. I love hearing stories and getting talked to it. You fall through here. This is when clickers are there. This is when you're back into the combat. Again, though, this is the evolution of The Last of Us combat, where beforehand we got a presentation from Neil, and he was, you know, running through the highlights of what you're about to do and what you're about to do and or see. And it is, of course, that this is their biggest game. This is a bigger world. There's all this different stuff. You can run from danger. That's like a varied strategy sometimes. But it's also the fact that Ellie is not Joel. Ellie is a 19-year-old woman who's athletic and is out there, right? So she has a dedicated jump button, so she can climb over things. She can get up on, you can explore that way. You can use it in combat to get away from things. Ellie has a dodge button. So now it is that if you're fighting someone, you can dodge around them. If someone's shooting at you from a distance, or shooting at you, period, you can dodge to make them less accurate. And, of course, you can use it to give yourself some distance from the clickers or from whatever.
How does that work? Is it like in Spider-Man where, you know, Spider-Man has a spidey sense and you see that on
him? No, it's very much a button. It's just a button where it's like you're using it like, I mean, think of, Assassin's Creed, where you'd be using it to dodge there in combat, right? To cover ground or give yourself space or just get away. And like the 9-minute video they just put out today, Neil talks a little bit about it too and shows one of the boss fights with a clicker where eventually I came into a room, this is in Seattle, but came into a garage and there was a clicker there that had a bow on its back that gave me a real fisticuffy kind of fight, right? And it was, I needed to dodge their grabs and stuff to actually get around and stab them and have switchblade. In the same breath of sneaking up on these things now, right? You don't have the shivs anymore, right? Or at least in the demo we played, they might be there for like last minute gets you out of things, but you do have your switchblade. So you can come up and stab people or stab humans or clickers in the back and take them out that way and be ready to go.
So I want to know this both from a story perspective and from a gameplay perspective. Naughty Dog's games have always kind of built on each other from the Uncharted games over to Last of Us and then back to Uncharted 4.
Yeah.
Uncharted 4 adding the kind of open world sections, adding the dialogue choices for stories, and then also adding, I think, a bit more in terms of the CQC type combat stuff that was really introduced in 3 and kind of perfecting that more so than I think Last of Us did. Or if not perfecting, at least having much better.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
How does this game feel in terms of the advancements of Naughty Dog in those ways?
I think you see it the best in the Seattle demo. So you're playing the first part here in the winter. Okay, we run into some clickers. We run into the new Shambler, which is this giant, like, mutated mass that, like, pumps out poison gas, and you have to run from and do it. Even here, they're not giving me room to run away from these things, right? I'm in a room with them. I can do different things. There's different strategies to take them down. But it does feel like, okay, cool. It's Last of Us with the dodge and with this. And, you know, I have the knife. This is great. Cool. Jumping to the suburbs, right? This was very much the man's inhumanity to man, right? We're in the suburbs of Seattle now. We are making our way, trying to find Tommy. They've been taken over by, and I've seen this get thrown around today a lot. Obviously, you should know, the WLF. It is this xenophobic, basically militia group that has taken over this town. This is one of their bases. They have like their rules of conduct and shit there when you get there for the environmental storytelling.
Mm-hmm.
To your point though, right? As you start infiltrating into this town and you're exploring, you're doing all this different stuff, it starts to feel, oh, there's a lot here. And I wonder if I'm on Critical Path, but it is that it's open. And so as I'm going, I eventually, you know, find this way to squeeze through or whatever it was to get over here to this locked door, this locked like storefront that's off the beaten path with a giant, you know, cut around it. Like, this isn't main content. This is something I've explored and found, right? Which brings me to one of my favorite things in this game is they try to increase the realism of it. The door is locked, right? But it's just got a big glass window. So I take out my brick and I throw my brick through the window and it shatters in a real window wood. And I get to just crawl in there, get all my different crafting materials, my different supplements.
What kind of were the signposts that you could do that?
It's already been established earlier on in the other thing of they were like, oh, hey, like, well, you can break this. You know, like, you got to, I think it was a pharmacy or whatever, and Dina's like, we can break the, you know, blah, 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 or you could have done it a different way, but like, you know, it's very much telling you in the tutorial earlier on. It is a mechanic of the game.
Would you say the environments are open like they were in Uncharted Lost Legacy?
No.
Okay.
I think that was one example of, oh, here's a nook and cranny and something that I didn't have to find. This, you know, it was more of a storyline, it was more resource material, it was more supplements to upgrade Ellie, which we can talk about in a second. But where it really kicked off for me was I got out and got into combat with the humans. And this is where I'm talking about, and this is the beginning of what will be, as long as this part of the demo was for me, probably an hour, 45 minutes, of the heart in my chest intensity of this game. And what I think it does so well in terms of making me uncomfortable playing it, but wanting to play more. Where it was like very much, I'm investigating a building, and then sure, you know, the car pulls up, and like people get out and they start climbing down, and it's like I drop low, and I'm like, shit, they're out there, you know what I mean? Like, and it is this thing suddenly, and they're coming in with dogs now. There's people have, you know, German shepherds or whatever that can trace you. So you'll see, when you go into listen mode now, you can see your like chemtrail, but your scent that the dog can find and follow you, and you have to distract the dog with a brick or whatever to get it to go. But what it was is that I had, you know, two different handguns. I had a rifle, I had a shotgun, and I had my knife, and I had some traps and explosives. But all the guns had, like, maybe max three bullets. Most of them only had one. So it was very much that I'm not supremely loaded out, which immediately makes you, you know, as Last of Us should, makes me feel like, okay, cool, I have to fight for survival here. But it literally is a fight for survival in the fights. Whereas I always felt Last of Us, the first time around, wasn't a puzzle game, but kind of felt like that, where there's a solution to this room that I need to go this way, do this thing, and get that way. There's different ways you could do it, but it wasn't open.
Yeah.
Right? And so I think it's unfair to say the environment I played in the suburbs is open like when you're driving in the Jeep of Uncharted. Mm-hmm. It's not. However, it is open in the way that there are what felt like infinite number of houses around, probably, I don't know, a dozen, seven, something like that, really spread out all over the place. So that I'm in this storefront, a new group shows up, it's two people and a dog that walk, or three people and a dog that walk in. I pin myself against the wall, and I'm sitting there like, okay, how are they going to come at me? What am I going to do? And like, while I'm thinking of it, the woman with the dog come around the corner, and she's over here! And immediately, I have to engage with the dog, and so I'm just immediately melee switchblading this dog. Eventually, you jump on it and start stabbing in the neck. The woman now screaming for her dog. The dog has a name. She falls back. She starts to shoot. I get up. I start dodging left and right to make up the distance to her. Mm-hmm. Start slashing at her. It's not one of the pretty, not at all one of the pretty from behind thing. I'm slashing at her. You see the cut on her cheek. You see the cuts on her arm. You see it start to happen. Get up, kill her. Now a dude shot me from across the way. Drop down. Start healing myself. All right, here we go. Come up with the shotgun. Blam. Got him, right? Okay, now I'll finish healing myself. Start healing myself. All of a sudden, there's another group out there that heard the commotion. One of them squeezes through the crack in the wall. So suddenly, I'm on them before they notice stabbing that person. It is this thing of everyone is coming to get where the noise is, and the AI is smart enough to recognize what's happened, the clues to put it all together, and it's this upping the ante over and over again that there wasn't a chance to catch my breath as I went until finally the final guy's coming at me, and I pulled out the handgun and blew his head off, and then it was like that. It's silent for a change. And it was like, Jesus Christ. All right, bandage yourself up. Do this over there, blah, 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 blah. And then it would be advanced to the next area as I'm trying to find. There's this like black smoke in the distance that Tommy's done something. And that's where I've got to head to. Keep heading that way. Find the new area of people, right? Get in. I got this down. No, I don't. Dog pins me down. It's biting at me. I'm able to fight it off. I'm able, I think, to kill that one. Doesn't matter. I'm hurt. I do not have enough shots to make this happen. I'm on the run. Run. And this is where it's open. Where I run back to the house I came through, out the front door, through the thing, through a blown wall of another one, back behind. And it's like, this is where it was when Neil was like, you can run, and it's an actual strategy. I didn't know what that meant. And here it became like, oh, I get it. Like, I can go now and home alone this and make them come to me and actually set traps and figure it out. Most time in games, especially third-person action games, when they give you the traps or the booby trap, I'm never like, that's never what I'm going to use, right? But what I found myself doing here was like, okay, cool. Like, you know, Ellie can obviously crouch, but she can also go prone and crawl through the grass and stuff. It's kind of like Solid Snake. It's not like, you know, an Assassin's Creed, if they walk up on a bush and you're still blacked out, they're like, oh, no, nobody's here. It's not that. The characters are smart enough to walk on and be like, there's a backpack sticking out of this bush. It's the girl. Mm-hmm. But it was that while I'm doing that and I see the dog, right? This is my I know it's already gotten a lot of play in the press already of like fighting these dogs and how do you stop the dogs and can you hide from the dogs. I was like, I'm sure there's a way to stealth kill these dogs. I'm sure there's a way to get away from these dogs. I'm not going to try to learn that in this demo. Like, I'm going to kill every one of these fucking dogs, which sucks because they all cry and it makes me think of Porty, of course, and all these different things. But it was that, you know, I'm in the tall grass and I'm setting, they're coming this way. I'm going to set a bomb here and I'm going to fall back and then lure them over this way, right? I hope they catch my scent and come over here. And sure enough, they did. It blew up. The dog's dead. The woman runs over to see it. I'm able to then, Bonaire at this point, knock her out. And then somebody else came to check on her. Like, what the fuck's going on?
So what does your arsenal look like? Because it sounds like they're providing a lot of options in terms of environment and like how, like where to go and like places to go and places to hide and how you're going to approach combat in that sense.
Sure.
But like, what guns did you have? What, when you say traps, what kind of traps did you have? Was it the bombs?
It was very much, remember the bombs from the first game? Like, make that would like go off like with nails and stuff.
Yep.
IEDs like that. There, I had an IED that was like a smoke bomb that could distract them, right? So if they were coming at me, I could throw it at them. Also, there's a mechanic that I think is new, but I could be corrected on this, that if you are engaging someone and you throw a brick at them or whatever melee, weapon at them as they're engaging you, that stuns them enough to give you the upper hand for a second to get off your feet.
Yeah, that's in the first one.
Was it? I don't remember that. I never did it. Yeah.
Yeah.
You have the smoke bomb that you can throw at them and that'll distract them and let you get away or, you know, choke them out so you can run up and get them. Then, the other thing I had was another IED that was just something you placed at your feet. It wasn't a throwable. I had Molotovs that eventually that I could throw and use that way.
Yeah.
I had a shotgun. I had a long range rifle. I had a regular pistol, and then I had like a snub nose pistol, more like a Magnum or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And then eventually, when I fought the one clicker that was like a boss fight clicker in the garage, was able to get a bone arrow from them. And a crafting works very similar to the Last of Us the first time. From the quick menu, I need this, and if it's lit up, you can craft next to it. Ellie will take off her backpack, throw it down, make the thing. Upgrading your gun is to the workbench. The workbenches are hidden all over the world. You can run up there. She flips on the power strip. The light comes on, and then she tosses down the gun. It's more interactive this time around in terms of what you're visually seeing. So it is that, I choose to upgrade the pistol. She goes, takes apart the pistol, puts it down. There's my upgrades over here that I'm using the screws and parts for. She goes through and, makes a silencer, makes an extended magazine, something to that effect. As you go, you're picking up pills, which are supplements. The supplements, then you can go into when you're with Ellie, you go into her menu, right? And you can then upgrade them to be like, what was it? I wrote some of them down. Listen, you're faster when you're in listen mode. You heal yourself faster, throw difference, increase health.
Are those limited time things, or
no, those are permanent,
like skill tree type?
It's a skill
upgrades.
Tree kind of thing, exactly. So you unlock the first one, that unlocks the next one that you can start going into and go down this skill tree of making.
Did you get to see the skill tree?
Yeah, as I went down it was stuff like that, and then it does unlock. This is actually in the 9 minute thing that I didn't pick up on. I didn't jot it down in my actual trailers. There's perks and stuff as you go down, but again, go watch the 9 minute thing. It talks more about that in terms of what it's giving you, because I think it might be. Craftables. It gives you a different craft. That is right, actually. Different things to craft as you go down the list.
Is it one of those things where by the end of the game you imagine you'll have the full skill tree unlocked, or is it?
I do. It's not. It's not like Borderlands or something where it's like. It was very much like a column. So I do this and I unlock that and I unlock that, and it's like different ones, obviously, as you go down and do it. Another thing that's getting a lot of play today that deserves it is the fact that the AI is in the world itself is trying to do that. Make the world feel more fleshed out, that like when when I kill somebody or they find that, or like when it'll pop off and I pop up and I shoot the person in the head, another enemy will yell that person's name. Like they'll yell the name of the dog when I kill the dog. When they find a body, they'll be like, they got whoever over here. Like it's trying to give this thing of like,
these are people,
the weight of your actions.
Animals, they're not just animals, they're pets.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, yeah.
Like friends.
Exactly.
But like, how. You're describing this as if they're nailing the vibe of like making it feel intense and you believe in the world. There's that fine line with that level of violence that I think that we all kind of hit our peak with Walking Dead season 7 early.
Sure.
There's things that happen in the beginning of that season, if you haven't seen it, that are extremely violent.
Right.
And it kind of felt like violence for violence's sake. And it was very important for the story, but I feel like the story never kind of was able to move on from that for most people because it turned into this kind of like torture porn almost.
Sure.
How does this differ from that?
I think the fact that it doesn't glorify the gore, if that makes sense. As I'm talking about, like, you see the cut on the cheek, you see that it's not like their guts are falling out. It's not like their arms falling off. It's the fact that you're seeing in this intense battle that happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if I was a betting man, I would bet, as we've seen in the trailer and as my demo ended literally where the trailer ends, right? where I've been making my way to this explosion. I hop down and boom, Joel grabs you from behind, turns you around. You think I'd let you do this on his own, on your own. My belief, and this is just me spitballing, is that throughout this adventure, what the story is going to be is Joel trying to talk her down of like, I've done what you've done. I've gone on this quest for revenge before. Like, this doesn't end the way you think it does, right? Mm-hmm. It's going to change who you are. You don't need to do this. And I think you get that alone. It teases from that already in the happy place I started my demo with, where Ellie and Dina are walking around, and Dina's talking about a character who's already passed away that she used to do patrols with. And she's like, oh, yeah, you know, I don't know how much you can believe him, though. And like, he tells stories all the time. What are some stories? Well, he talked about how, you know, Tommy once told him he did something really bad or whatever, and like actually had details. I just don't remember him. And she's like, I don't believe it, though. And Ellie's like, no, I believe that. Like, and she's like, you do? And like, yeah, Joel's told me about what him and Tommy had to do to survive in the beginning of this, right? Like, I feel there's this, you know, Joel wants her to have a better life angle to it. And I think, you know, there's a one specific video clip that keeps getting shared that's in the trailer and like is in the 9-minute documentary and stuff, right? And it's when we get the shot from like Ellie's ankle of her hand shaking, right? Yeah. And her like doing it like that.
The Arthur.
If you're an audio listener, shutting her fist and like calming down, like bringing the adrenaline down. That's what I felt playing the game. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I said on GameSpot yesterday when we were talking about it, right? I wasn't emotionally prepared to go into this, which sounds goofy, I know, but it was that Last of Us, as we all remember, was a downer of a game, right? It was very intense. Like, it's a lot of people's favorite games. It did a lot of cool stuff, but it's also, I think Andy said it earlier today, right? It's his favorite game he's never replayed, right? And I've tried before, too, and it's just not something that stuck with me. When I was in there, and I talked about this earlier, it was the most intense game I've ever had. Every fight that ended in there was exhilarating because it came down to a coin flip at the end that it could have gone either way. Mm-hmm. At no point did I feel like a badass. Did I feel like I'm fucking destroying this? It didn't feel like Borderlands. It didn't feel like Odyssey. Wow. It felt like I can't fucking believe I did that. I can't believe it's finally done. I can finally take a breath. My heart is beating in my chest, literally. I can bandage up. And then it would be that thing of like the next car pulls up, right? And I'm like, and it's the fucking shit. Okay, how are we going to do this? Mm-hmm. And the amount of times it came down to Ellie obviously, crouched with the gun in her hand and the final body dropping, or being able, it does feel good to, you know, get the drop on people and sneak up and knife them or whatever, but not in the way of like, oh man, I'm celebrating this. It feels intense. Mm-hmm. And it was that thing of I don't want to kill more, but I have to kill more. And that's what was interesting of seeing the previews today of, it's that question of, do I? Like, do I have to kill more? Like, I'm interested to see how they play with this as I go. I know, like, Dornbush's article on IGN made it seem like you could stealth past some of the dogs and stuff. I never saw that option. I only saw the option to really engage with them. It's probably my playstyle. It's probably the way I was investigating the world. It's the same reason you're seeing
dropping bombs.
Oh, yeah, you're seeing all these previews that go like, oh, man, I played an hour and a half of Last of Us 2. And I'm like, I played 2 hours of it. And I've seen other people, I played 3 hours of it.
Yeah,
and
it's like, I saw one that was like four. And
we
I was
all
like,
played
huh.
the same thing. And it's like, it's how you're going to engage and how your coin flip things ended, right? Like, it sounds stupid, I know. It sounds really stupid. But I connect and sympathize so much with that shot of Ellie's hand shaking and stopping it. Mm-hmm. Of like, that's how it felt to play this game. Where it's like, I'm excited to see the story and go back in this. I'm excited to see what's going to happen and what happened to Dina and what's going to happen to Joel and where Ellie's going to net out, right? I think the gameplay is incredible. But I think it comes with a cost, and I think it comes with a weight, and I don't think that's something we see often. As me and Blessing played Borderlands last night and just obliterated everything we saw and had a great time, and you know, got our loot and we're super excited, right? Like, this is more man's inhumanity to man. This is more, what is the cost of this going to be? And it's happening in an incredibly beautiful world. It's happening in a world, back to the very beginning of this talk of the preview, a world that is so well realized that I felt it as I played it, right? I think it's, you know, so beautifully animated. Again, it's the facial expressions in-game, let alone in the cutscenes.
Is this the best-looking game you think you've seen?
That's a good question, Bless. That's a good question. I could make the case for it. I want to play more. It's the same thing of like right now, I'm like, oh man, like I think it's going to be game of the year 2020, right? Cyberpunk could still come out and blow me away when I play it. Mm-hmm. This could also turn into a Days Gone situation. I wasn't,
seven remake.
I wasn't this. It in there, man. Yeah, sure, it wasn't.
Seriously.
They're fucking lying to our faces and not putting part one on the box and I won't have it.
All right, so it's still going to be in contention.
I'm fucking around. But it is that thing of, I can't imagine this one being off track from where it is. Yeah. And I do think it's going to push all of us in a way. Like it's very much, you know, it's a tired story for me, and I won't spoil. But like how when I finished The Last of Us and I was like, I can't believe that happened. I can't believe this is what's going on. And it was very much, I was like, even though I don't appreciate that in terms of that choice, I understand it. And I love that Naughty Dog told me their story. Mm-hmm. And this is very much unflinchingly, we're telling you our story.
Yeah, which it needs to be, especially 100%. For them and what they're doing here. Yeah. So with that, was there any dialogue options?
No.
Do you expect there to be any in this game?
I don't know.
Because this is their vision.
I think
this is story.
I think, like again, I think the dialogue options in Uncharted were there for a specific reason, which was
celebrating the
hey,
franchise.
You've been here for three games, wink, you know, four if you count Golden Abyss, and here you are, like, because that was how it worked, right? When it was, you know, Sam being like, oh man, tell me your favorite story or whatever, and you got to go through and pick what you talked about and what you prioritized. Mm. And here I think it is Ellie talking about it herself and telling you what the story is and where it's going to go and how it's going to be.
So where are you at with where you think the story is going to go? Because I know the last trailer, the events of that last trailer made people believe that, you know, and I'm sure people have listened this far, they probably don't care about the details of the last
They probably watched the trailer.
Yeah. So. It seems that Dina is going to die, and it might be a revenge tale of Ellie and Joel going after Dina's killers.
Yeah.
Do you get that vibe if that's what, like that? That's what it's going to be?
Are we getting swerved, baby?
Or are we getting swerved?
I don't know. You know, and I don't know. I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the thing is, like, I love the surprise of that. I love the story unfolding as we go. I think, yeah, obviously that trailer makes it look like when Ellie's being held down on the ground looking over, right, that something horrible is happening to Dina. Is it murder? Is it sexual assault? I don't know. All like horrible fucking things to see. And then that clip of her and the, you know, getting out of bed and her back's all bruised and like a couple cuts on it and stuff. I don't know. I don't know what's going to push her there. It's, I feel like if it's that she, Dina's been kidnapped, that has been taken hostage or whatever, it doesn't line up to me in a certain way of like, well, there'd be more hope, I feel, in the story than there would. You know what I mean? Like, the fact that Neil's like, this is hate. Like, you know what I mean? The first game was love, and this game's hate. Makes me think, like, you're out there, like, with nothing to lose, right? That's the reason you're out there. And the way she's going to take these
Does
people
on. Does she have
on. A dog? No dog, it looks like, for Ellie. I don't know. Maybe your backpack will have a little porty in it. You know what I mean? Like, out there.
On GameSpot, I did float the idea that, like, okay, it's not Joel, it's not Dina, it's actually the dog.
Yeah.
John Wick. It's John Wick.
John Wick, baby.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I mean, that's what it seems, but then again, it gets so tied up in. We're still saying everybody's on. My whole thing from the other demo, right, with the hammer and the woman being hung, right, was that that's a flashback to Ellie's mom. That was my take on it, right? And I haven't seen that trailer in months now, but I remember. I remember that her saying something and then like kind of panning to her stomach, where it would be like she was with child. Like that was my. But I don't know how that's gonna get told. Like that's the Laura Bailey character, one of them, right?
I love it
like,
though.
Exactly, and I don't want to, right?
I totally forgot about that trailer.
And that's the thing where it looks so simple on paper. Mm-hmm. It looks like, yep, Ellie has fallen in love with Dina. Dina has been while, and it's like, does this, whatever happens that goes wrong, does that happen like right after what I played? Mm-hmm. Or is it, because again, like then it's like, I don't even think the time matched up. Again, me saying summer about Seattle is totally me based on what it looks like.
Feels that way.
Right? Mm-hmm. So let's say even it was spring, which it looks way too overgrown to be spring, like, so Dina got killed or kidnapped or whatever in the dead of winter, and then months later, Ellie sets off on this quest. Like, I feel like, and that was the whole thing, too, where we were talking about yesterday on GameSpot, right, of, like, I understand totally you look at the trailer, and the knee-jerk reaction is they're fridging this woman, right? They've introduced this woman. Now she's immediately getting killed. That's going to set off. What a trope, right? I feel like we're missing a large part of the narrative there as to what that is going to be to get us to Seattle in the summer. Mm-hmm. And I can't say what it's going to be because I don't know, and I'm not going to defend it blindly, but I do know that time and time again, Naughty Dog has proven that they are smarter than me and better at telling a story than me and able to take characters and themes in a different direction than I thought they would. Mm. So how this ties back to these flashbacks of Ellie's mom, why would we be getting them? And again, Kevin, you don't mind looking at the chat if anybody's calling me out to say, no, that's not a flashback that is current. I don't know, because I'm not media dark on it, but I'm also not trying to gobble up everything.
And that's my thing, is like I'm kind of just trying to stay away. It's like when there's trailers in State of Plays or whatever, I'm going to watch that, but it's like...
It's just like what narratively is going to motivate those flashbacks to whatever that is?
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be Joel telling the story? Is it going to be Joel reliving something? You know what I mean? I don't know.
Hmm.
Let alone then it was Corey Cudney last night, right? Who spliced up footage from the original Last of Us and the stuff from Last of Us 2. I'm trying to buy time to bring it up here, right? As I scroll back and...
You're trying to find it, on Reset Era, I saw a thread going up that people were super surprised that the game now looks as good as it did when it was first shown, which is a rarity these days when it comes to those type of trailers. Like, the animation's still the exact same quality.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, like, again, like, I know, like, when we watch, and it's a cutscene or whatever, but that's the thing, is the transitions between them. I just sent it to you at control, Kevin. You can keep scrolling, though. Okay, great. Right there, 19 hours ago. I lost it at the beginning of Last of Us. When they talk about people getting lynched and cut up on the street, I was reading that. just like the incident Ellie witnesses later on in the Paris Game Week trailer. Now, again, I don't think Ellie's witnessing this. I think this is my...
Separate occurrence.
My old-ass hypothesis on this was that it's her mom, or this is somebody here related to her, but seeing like Nira was.
Yeah.
What does she say about the baby?
They are nested with sin.
Jesus.
Seeing like she does... So I forget what she says, but she does something. Yeah, you know. Like,
yeah.
God.
I don't know what exactly we're getting into. I don't want to know what's happening in terms of the narrative. I do think they're smarter than us, and I also, like we were talking about with Callie, right? Like, I think if you flesh out the character, and again, I don't know much about the trope, and I'm from a different place. If you flesh out the character and make Dina fully realized and that she's not just a prop, I think you can do it and tell it and not be super offensive and do all these different things.
Mm.
Yeah, we'll see. It's a delicate balance, man. Like,
totally.
Tropes aside, just again, the violent side of it, it's like you really need to make sure that it is worth it at the end of the day, or else you're not really saying anything.
Yeah.
And I have faith in them more than anyone making games. So,
of course.
Yeah. You got me hyped.
I'm super hyped. I have another question.
Yeah, please lay them on me. I want to go through and make sure I hit all my biggest points.
What do you think is the thing that Last of Us Part 2, from your time with the demo, does to separate itself the most from the first game?
I mean, this feels like a better game, for sure, in terms of how it controls, in the terms of... I mean, like, you know, it feels... Again, with Last of Us, I always felt like those were those moments of... You open a door, you get bitten by the clicker, you're like, fuck, I shouldn't have done it that way, you restart. One of my notes in here, and again, as I've talked about it before, it's two levels at Riot, it's two areas. It was like near instantaneous loading of like, I fucked up and died, and then it'd be boom, I was right back to it. And I was, you know, back to where my last kill pretty much was to be able to go. But like, you know, there's one point again where I was off the beaten path and I was doing my thing and exploring, and you know, I moved something away from a door, and you're like, all right, well, clearly this is just story based, and you open the door and it wasn't, and it was a room full of fucking clickers, and it was the, you know, not even the full blown clickers, the one with the milky eyes or whatever, and they came running out, and it was like, there was no time to plan, there was no warning, and suddenly I was in the shit of it. And it was like, fuck, but shoot, fuck, this gun's out of ammo. Run, I climbed up on top of a thing, they started running at me, I got down a Molotov, I jumped down, I ran, I threw, it went off, it killed most of them, then one last guy, and I was like, fuck, poof. And it was like that moment of, fuck, that's awesome, you know what I mean? And then going into the room and getting the loot that was in there that had nothing to do with the story, that was to make, you know, the journey better and make me a better character and stuff like
Speaking
that.
Speaking of looting and ammo, how did the balancing feel in terms of, because like in the first Last of Us, of course, you feel like you're always scavenging for bullets because, you know, that's what makes that game intense, right?
Yeah.
The fact that, like, you know, this stuff is scarce, and you need that stuff to survive with all the infected and everything, right? I know playing RE2 Remake earlier this year, they do a pretty good job in that game of... I think they have, like, a smart system where they know how much ammo you have, and so when you're picking up ammo pouches, they balance it so that you're picking up enough for what will be the next encounter. Did you sense that at all while you're playing, or do you feel like...
I would argue to say there has to be something going on under the hood to that extent, because, again... It always was a scrap, which is one of the reasons I really dug it, because it did make me think. And like, what I think with most games, it is that idea that you get all these games, and I'm like, I will never use a sniper rifle, and I never use a sniper rifle, and I move on, right? Whereas this, it was like, I'm down to just four bullets in the rifle. I have to use a rifle even though this isn't a long-range situation. But then it was also baiting where took out a whole bunch. Two people started running from the other side. I ran and got low and like just crouched and waited. And the woman came up, and as soon as she got to my last known location, which is where I was crouching, she started slowly coming around with her gun drawn. But I jumped up with this machete and cleaved her in the neck. And it's like you have that moment of like, that could have gone either way, and it worked the way I wanted it to this time, that I was able to get there, and then I'm able to get maybe a bullet off of her and move on. Mm. Like, it felt, I never was completely out of ammo. I was never knee-deep in ammo, and I was going through everything, getting everything. I felt like I was getting a lot of bolts. It felt like I was going to be able to really do some damage in terms of upgrading my weapon the next time I hit a workbench.
Awesome. Interesting.
Yeah.
What else you got for me here, Greg?
I think that was funny stuff. There's a Crash Bandicoot reference. You haven't seen anything, right?
I have not. Please tell me.
You sure?
I mean,
they find a porn tape that is it's a play on Crash Bandicoot.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's cute. It's very, very cute. And like that thing too is like
porn cute.
Super super in love with the relationship of Ellie and Dina from that just what I played ever, that first part of it, right? And like I'm excited to see more of them, and I can totally get it. And the passion between them, and then the animations of them together and stuff. Again, where I'm talking about nonverbal cues of like, how Ellie still is a very stoic kid. Like she's not like super talkative. So it is like reading her facial animation, seeing how Dina plays off that and interacts with her is great.
How do you feel about there being no multiplayer?
I'm fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care. That's never been what I don't. I enjoyed Uncharted 2 and 3 multiplayer, right? Last of Us, I played enough of it. And I was like, oh, I get why people like this. I'm not here for this. I know you're a big fan.
You loved it, right?
I love the multiplayer, yeah. And this is, I talked about a lot on Games Day that it is a huge bummer for me that this game isn't going to have multiplayer. That said, I'm still going to buy this game for $60 and I'm still going to enjoy it, and it'll still be one of my favorite games of the year. Because if it shapes up to be what it sounds like it is, right? I did love the single player campaign first and foremost, but I think Last of Us multiplayer for the first one I think was very special, and I think more people should have played it. I don't know how many people ended up playing it, if that did end up being a super popular thing, but maybe that's why they took it out of the out of part two. But yeah, it's a bummer for me for sure.
Yeah.
But it doesn't ruin the game.
Of course not.
Yeah.
And that's just a personal thing of like, I'd much rather them focus and nail this. And also we talked about it, blessing you and me, on one of the many shows we've done. I don't remember which one anymore. But like, I remember being at IGN and watching Naughty Dog's Rise and being like, they're going to fuck up at some point. If they're working on multiplayer and they're like, this is not coming together, like fucking scuttle it. Don't worry about like putting that in so the reviews have something to say. So it's like, yeah, the story was great. Bad. But the multiplayer, right? Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, the one thing I didn't talk about, and like this is, my note here is this is from when I was going, right? Battles are as intense as ever. A man, woman, and dog approached me. I killed the dog. I started to heal. The woman came through the door. I kill her, go after the guys. It turns out the woman behind me wasn't dead. That I slash, and she had gone down, and I was like, you're dead, great. Went to the guy, and as I'm doing it, I think she came over like a 2x4 or whatever and whacked me. Damn. Like, fuck!
Interesting. Did you get, was there a relationship there between the man, the woman, and the dog? Did it seem like they were like a family?
It seemed like they had been together probably 7 years. I think the dog they had as a puppy, and like they really nursed it.
Wow.
Once I got hit with a 2x4, I had a flashback.
Oh my God.
No, I don't know what the relationship
was. Okay, I was like,
they probably yelled their name. And like, so give it cons, if there are any or whatever.
Mm.
Like, I definitely noticed, and again, it's early and yada, yada, yada. Like, I was playing, and the first time they yell somebody's name, like Abigail, and I don't remember if that was the name anymore. I didn't jot it down. Abigail, like holy shit, blah, blah. And then it would happen again or something. Oh, we found Dave over here. But then again, it would be Abigail. I was like, how many fucking Abigails are in this goddamn crew? You know what I mean? Like, there was time between them, but it did happen, right? Dodge,
cool,
I think,
Abigail.
Dodge feels video gamey. Right? Like, it is that thing of, like, you're doing, and it's like, you'd be dodging and doing it, but it does feel like I was spamming it, and I was feeling cool when I did it, because I was not getting shot, and it wasn't what I thought Last of Us 1 combat was, of like, oh, I fucked this puzzle up, I'm dead, I gotta restart it. This was, again, like, oh, shit, I'm really hurt, but I'm gonna be able to get out of this if I do this, that, and the other.
Hmm.
Little things like that I don't think are cons, but I think are worth pointing out, of, like, that breaks the immersion.
Yeah.
I think I saw a couple of the NPCs that I was fighting, like, oh, wait. I've killed you before. Like, I recognize your face.
I know for you, Red Dead Redemption 2, you had an issue with the fact that you felt like
I was the bad guy.
Yeah, you were the bad guy, and you didn't really enjoy the ways in which that game made you the bad guy.
Right.
It didn't give
me choice, I felt.
Yeah. Do you have any of the same fears as The Last of Us 2? Since Ellie seems like, yeah, it's going to be a revenge tale, and she's probably going to be pretty merciless. Do you foresee that being an issue for you at all, or do you think
no,
you can get past that?
No, but now this is, again, me writing the own narrative, right?
Yeah.
That I don't think Ellie's the bad guy. Okay. I think Ellie is living in Jackson, trying to have a normal life, and then runs awry, you assume, with either this group, the WLF, or whoever the people are that you run into, that then these WLF people get in the way of me getting there. Like, mm-hmm. I do, and that was, you know, one of the things Neil put at the start of his presentation, right? Of like, and it's something he said before, but like, you know, how far would you, at Last of Us was, how far would you go for someone you love, right? And this one is like, how far would you go if someone crossed those you love, right? And I think that is a very base instinct of all of us, right? Of like revenge and that thing. And I don't think it's going to be that she, and I don't know. I don't think it's going to be that she's going to run across like, who were the brothers in the first game, right?
Sam?
Is that checking out? Yeah.
Maybe? Yeah, the two black dudes.
Yeah.
I can't remember their names. I think one of them might have been Sam.
Okay, whatever. But like, I don't think you'd run across them and just kill them for no reason. Maybe she will, or whatever. And maybe that actually is going to be a conversation with her and Joel, right? Of how like you get there and if that becomes that section of it.
Mm.
But yeah, like based on the 2 seconds I saw of her happy with Dina, I'm like, yes, I will kill people who fuck this up, and I will hunt them across these United States to do so.
Oh man, you gotta love it,
Sam and Henry.
So, are we ready to move on from Last of Us Part 2?
I'm ready to move on. It's great. It's awesome. I can't wait.
Let me tell you about our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Movement. Here's the deal. Movement watches, Movement sunglasses. We've been talking about them for years. They're kind of funny. We're huge fans. Gia always wearing these Movement sunglasses. Is that right, Kevin? Kevin nods yes. It's an audio podcast as well. You know what I mean? They'd appreciate some words from Kevin Coelho. Cool Greg also wears the watch constantly. He loves the gold one. But that's the thing. With the watches, they give you so many. Now he's laughing silently over there.
There's no video component, so they couldn't see me nod either.
Oh, man. I really, really dislike you sometimes. But I really love Movement watches. Again, both their watches and sunglasses are fantastic. Me and Greg Miller always bust our sunglasses out whenever we're traveling. They're very stylish. There's so many different styles to choose from. Average person spends almost 7 hours a day in front of a screen. And Movement's blue light glasses help us to change our habits so that we can keep up with a changing technological world. You might know Andy Cortez streams constantly at night over on twitch.tv/AndyCortez or Maximum Cortez. I think it's Andy Cortez. Anyways, he's been using these Movement blue light glasses, and he loves them. He's looking cute in them. You guys see that. You already knew all that stuff. Everscroll blue light filtering glasses start at just $65. Whether you're at the office scrolling through your phone or unwinding from a long day, Everscroll glasses have you covered. Better focus, better sleep, better style. You can get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/kinda. Shop Movement Everscroll blue light filtering glasses. Protect your eyes and look great doing it. Go to mvmt.com/kinda to join the movement and get 15% off today. Also, shout out to HelloFresh. With HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit, you can get easy seasonal recipes and pre-measured ingredients delivered right to your door. All you have to do is cook and enjoy. It really is that simple. Gia, she, love of my life. My fiance, she makes me food all the time. She made me some of the spicy spaghetti last week, Kevin. Oh, man, it was good. HelloFresh came through. But let me blow your mind for a second. One of our best friends, James Burke, you guys might know him.
Oh,
if you know anything about him,
James.
useless human being. Guess what? Recently has found some needs to be able to cook for himself. HelloFresh was there, and James Burke did it. James Burke was able. That's how simple this whole process is, and he's been loving it. You can break out of your dinner rut with HelloFresh's 20-plus seasonal chef-curated recipes each week. There's something for everyone, from family recipes to calorie-smart and vegetarian and fun menu series like Hall of Fame and Kraft Burgers. From step-by-step recipes to pre-measured ingredients, you'll have everything you need to get a wow-worthy dinner on the table in just about 30 minutes, even if you're James Burke. You can add extra meals to your weekly order, as well as yummy add-ons like garlic bread and cookie dough. Ooh. Easily change your delivery days, food preferences, and skip a week whenever you need to. Again, I love it. Very excited. I think tonight G is making something. I don't know what, though. I think some pork chop thing.
All right.
It's party time. It could be party time for you as well. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/kinda80 and enter kinda80. It's because you get $80 off. For $80 off your first month of HelloFresh, go to HelloFresh.com/kinda80 and enter code kinda80. I want to talk to you guys about the Nintendo Switch Lite.
Oh, Nintendo, look at that Vita.
Nintendo sent one over. I've been playing with it all week, all weekend. And I love this thing.
Yeah.
There are definitely, it's not for everyone. I think it's for a lot of people though. And if you do not have a Switch yet, I think it's a great entry point. So many people we know only play their Switch portably. And this, I think, is the best way to do that. With very specific exceptions. To me, I'm always going to play with the tabletop mode with the Pro Controller when I'm on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
That's just how I prefer to. I want more real estate on the screen, and I prefer how the controller feels. However, this does feel really nice. I love the way that the triggers feel compared to the Joy-Cons. Like, they have a nicer bounce, sure, and they just come out, sure, a little bit more. And the biggest thing for me is this thing is sturdy as hell. It is easily the nicest feeling handheld that I've ever,
really,
ever had.
It feels great.
It's sturdy as hell. It feels very quality. And the buttons, still too small for my taste, but that's always a Tim problem.
You got those giant fingers.
But the D-pad, it's like, this is way better than the Joy-Con.
This D-pad is amazing.
And the one use I've found for this that is the most first world solution I've ever seen, it's a problem I didn't have. I didn't know I gave a shit about. Playing this in bed is the greatest. It being lighter than the original Switch, it not having the Joy-Cons and having the issue of them like clicking slipping in and slipping. Like, a lot of times I'll be laying on my side with a pillow and it's just kind of like, this will be like nudged against the floor, right? And I always feel the Joy-Cons kind of like creaking just a little. And I always feel like I'm putting a little too much pressure on it because I'm pushing down on it. Like we always do. We've done for decades with Game Boys and PSPs and Vitas and all that stuff. This feels so sturdy and like it's made for that. And having this as a second Switch is such a luxury that I don't think is worth the investment. Where it's like, I don't think even somebody like me that likes to play my Switch in bed a lot also plays on TV. I'd say I'm about a 50-50 Switch user, which sounds like a rarity for people that I talk to. Like, what would you guys say you are?
Jeez.
I play docked mainly, probably like 80-20, but it very much depends on the game. Like Pokemon, not Yellow, Pokemon Pikachu.
Let's go
Eevee, yeah. I played that all handheld, same with like a lot of indie games, but I'm very much a docked person, which is why I'm actually kind of considering the Switch Lite. Because it
just leave your dock docked.
Yeah, it sounds excessive, and it is excessive.
But in that use, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, because like holding this, and that's my thing. Like I love my Switch. I think it's great. I think it feels nice to hold. But at the same time, like holding the Switch Lite, I just feels way better, and I think I feel more justified playing on my Switch Lite handheld. Obviously, because I can't dock it, but also because, yeah, like you said, it feels sturdier. I do have like the same like minute issue of like, yeah, laying in bed and then putting the pressure on the Joy-Cons. And my right Joy-Con does this thing where it like slips off.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what happened with the gears or whatever in the system. But yeah, dude, that thing, like the Switch Lite seems like it could be a good option for me.
It's really cool. And so now here's the thing. If you're going to play and have two Switches, one Switch Lite and one Switch that essentially stays docked unless you take it traveling like I had planned to or whatever. It's not the least convenient thing in the world to be able to play games across both, but it definitely could be easier. And it's like, damn it, Nintendo, you're so close. Mm. You're so close, but still so Nintendo. Really, there's a ton of articles that you can read about like the steps to do it the best in order to get the best experience. But what it comes down to is you can sign into your Nintendo account on both. You can download all the games that you own on both. Then your save data is in the cloud for the majority of games. Splatoon 2, Pokemon Let's Go, you got to assume Pokemon Sword and Shield. There's going to be exceptions that you're not going to be able to do this. But my test case has been Link's Awakening. You can totally do it, and it has been very simple, but it does require some thought before you go to play. How it works is you need to have one system that's your primary console. Whatever your primary console is, that is going to be the thing that kind of wins out at the end of the day, and you can only be playing the game and in one place or the other. Whatever your secondary console is, when you try to play a game, every single time you turn it on, it's going to ping the network. You need to be connected to the internet, and it checks to see if someone else is playing the game. If they're not, then it's good. You get to play. You need to manually download your save files. It manually uploads the save files to the cloud, but anytime you switch between consoles, you need to go into your settings. You need to download it. It takes all of 15 seconds. But
just a thing to remember.
It's a thing to remember. It's a thing to do. Or else, like, there have been multiple times where, like, I thought I did it right, and I load up Link's Awakening. I'm like, nah, I'm definitely a dungeon or two ahead of this. Like,
yeah.
Damn. But then, quick fix, you go back in. The way to solve the problem for most people would be making the light your primary console. That would make it so that it doesn't need to ping the internet. You'd only be pinging the internet for your docked console, and you have internet at home. So that shouldn't ever really be an issue. But again, that is such a luxury thing. So is it worth $200 to have an extra? I can't say yes, but there's been a ton of deals. I saw it as low as $165 pretty consistently last week. And I'm like, we're starting to get to a point where it's like, if you have the means and you play your Switch a lot, I feel like I've played more Switch. I was motivated to play more Switch this weekend, not having to get out of bed, not having to think about it.
Sure.
And it's like, I know that is, again, such a first world thing where it's like, your Switch, you could already play there, but it's like the ease of it. It's the weight of it, man. Hold this thing.
Yeah. I mean,
it's light.
Do you think that this leads them to eventually making a Switch Pro?
God, I hope.
That is like, because it sounds like that could be money in the bank for them, because that does motivate people to have, oh yeah, I can have a Switch Pro for the home and a Switch Lite for the go, and that makes way more sense than having a regular Switch and an out the door Switch, because that does seem excessive, right? But
I imagine a world where the original Nintendo Switch is phased out.
Interesting.
And that we get this and a new version. Will it be called Pro? Will it be called XL? Who the fuck knows? It's Nintendo.
Yeah.
But I see them kind of eventually having it where there are these two pillars that work in the same way that we saw the 3DS and Switch work next to each other for a little bit, right?
Or
3DS and Wii U back then. But I am very impressed with this. When they first announced this stuff, I was like, there's no use for me at all. I want a Pro. I get why this exists, especially with Pokemon coming out. Families want multiple Switches. A lower budget entry point is going to be great for the people that are interested, and especially with how many amazing games are already there on the Switch, right?
It does feel so good.
It's such an easy sell for people.
It's one of those, to your question a while ago, like, I'm 90-10 handheld, I'd say.
Yeah.
To the point that I put so many hours into Ultimate Alliance that I plugged it in, I don't know, 2 weeks ago into the dock and put it on TV, and I was like, holy shit, this game's beautiful. I've never seen the sprites this big. I've never seen the characters look like this.
Yeah.
Because
I
just haven't done it probably since, like, launch, or when we got our source code for it, or review code for it. And so, I don't know, like, I love it, and it, like you're saying, it's totally a luxury item, and it's like, I'm not going to do it. I could see where I'd, like, holding it, like, fuck yeah, I'd want this, right? But I still dig the fact that the whole Switch deal is, like, come home, pop it in the dock. I'm ready to go, pop it out of the dock. Mm-hmm. I haven't had as much Joy-Con problems with you, but I also don't play in bed like you do, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's and when, like, I'm on a plane, like, I'm either using the Switch,
Switch Fix,
yeah, where it's connected, like, for Ultimate Alliance, like, you see me on a plane, I got the Switch Fix connected to it, and then I have the Pro Controller attached to it. Or I'll put, if I'm there, I have it on the, with the kickstand and
tabletop.
The Pro Controller.
Or that, too. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, me and you, I know how we play those games, so it's like, this isn't for that. This is the perfect bedroom Switch.
Totally.
Which is so unnecessary, but there's a use case.
Man, the buttons are really good, though.
I think also a thing that I'm realizing now is that, you know how from, during the jump from Wii U to Switch, it felt like, you know, the Wii U was like a Fisher-Price toy, and then you jump to the Switch, and the Switch feels like a piece of technology.
Mm-hmm.
This almost feels like a backstep toward the toy side of things, but in the right way, where, like,
you don't
feel like you're going to break this.
I mean, this feels like a Game Boy. This feels like a Nokia phone. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like that era of tech, and I appreciate that. It does suck that this is undockable, because I feel like just having that function would really up the value
of
it.
Or even, like, just plug in a USB cable.
God, I mean, that's
your
dream.
Yeah.
Right. But I think it's real cool. And like I said, the save data, like having to download stuff, it's not that inconvenient, but it's just inconvenient enough that it's like, it makes you aware of Nintendo making really stupid choices with their ecosystem. But enough about the Switch Lite. The game I've been playing the most is Link's Awakening.
Yeah.
I talked a lot about it last week. I'm still playing through it. I'm towards the end now, but both Barrett and Andy have beaten it. Kevin bought it. Have you started it yet?
Kevin bought it.
Kev's checking.
Sorry about that. No, I haven't started it. I bought it late at night 2 days ago, and then I've had a super busy week. But I am very excited to start it. You were talking about it?
Yes.
You have been playing it.
I have
for
been playing it.
For the first time.
For the first time, and I'm not too far into it, so I don't have too much to say. I just beat the second dungeon. And the thing that playing this game has kind of made me realize is that I might be like one of them dumb kids, because like I feel so just lost playing this game a lot of the time because it is old Zelda. And I'm not like my history of Zelda, and this might shock a lot of people, I never really played a top-down 2D Zelda from front to back. I've like started Link to the Past a few times, and I've never really gotten super far any of the times. But I've played like Ocarina of Time and Twilight Princess and Breath of the Wild and a lot of the 3D Zeldas. And so for this being the first 2D Zelda where I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to beat this thing. Yeah, there are certain things like the way you... the solution to certain puzzles being like, oh, yeah, you're going to find this obscure hint over here that's going to tell you the order in which to kill the people in this specific room, and that's going to unlock the final boss key for this dungeon. And like figuring that out was such a pain, and it was very frustrating. But I mean, that's one that I did figure out myself, and it did feel good figuring that out. Half the solutions for when I get stuck, I end up just like looking up a guide, because it feels like one of those things where it's like, all right, light every bush on fire, hit your sword on every wall, and then eventually you'll find the solution. But like aside from that, I think the game looks beautiful. I have been having like the frame rate issues when I'm playing docked that I've noticed, mainly when there's bushes around.
Which is
always. and there's bushes all over this game. And so like
this game is at its worst. If you want to really understand the tech issues that it has, go to the northwest area, towards like the swamp. Like moment you get near the water with like the fish jumping and stuff, it's like it starts to crawl.
Yeah, but like aside from that, like the game looks beautiful. The soundtrack is beautiful. I like the quirkiness of it. Zelda has always had an amazing style in terms of what they go for artistically and the quirkiness of the world, and so that's been awesome. I have loved exploring the world. I do, and I also really love that unlike a lot of at least the 3D Zeldas I've played, right, there are unique names to locations, unique places. This is a unique world, right? I'm not happening across Kakariko Village or the Zora
domain.
Zora's domain or the Death Mountain, right?
Gerudo, you don't, Valley.
Gerudo, like it's not the same locations, which is so refreshing for a Zelda game, and it's making me want a new Zelda game that just gets rid of like the same locations and just goes for that sort of thing, right? Creating new places to explore, because it just feels different in such a great way, and I enjoy it because it feels new and it doesn't feel like I'm replaying the same story again. So I love that. And yeah, overall, like once again, I haven't played too much of it. I'm really enjoying it despite feeling super lost at some points. Yeah.
Yeah. The further I get into it, it's weird because it is a game out of time where it's like we're playing this game that looks modern and it like even plays modern with a lot of its like features and kind of gameplay adjustments they made with the button mapping and all of that.
Yeah.
But the idea of the world map itself and every single character, me and Barrett were talking about this a lot, where you really need to talk to every single person to understand where to go.
Yeah.
And their dialogue changes throughout the game. It's not like Pokemon, where if you're in one of the early towns, if you go later in the game somewhere else and then come back, they're still saying to throw a Pokeball, blah, blah, blah. It's like their dialogue's changing and it's updating with the story, and you're getting new hints from the same people. Or it's like, oh, yeah, the grandma. Oh, she moved to this other place. And you're like, oh, I'm going to need to go find her one day. And then like three dungeons later, it's like you run into this house. You're like, oh, the grandma's here. You know, it's like they're really good at that stuff. But you're right. A lot of it is obtuse as hell for the sake of padding the game, I think, of like making it longer, for making you explore and go. It's backtrack, but the game eventually gives you like some fast travel that works.
And
really
it seems like, you know, the world is built for backtracking, right? It's not annoying. It's not like it's a linear game and you have to like go through all the same corridors to get back to where you were, right? The game does a good job of making the world very explorable. But also it seems like, and I haven't played the original one, so you're going to have to like inform me, right? Because like you go in the menus and it keeps up a lot of the dialogue, like the important dialogue moments that have happened in the game that seem to be pointing you to the next location or the next thing you need to do. Is that a thing that's new to this game?
As far as I remember, that was not in the Game Boy game. Like, okay. I can't envision like how that would be in the menu, but that is such a great thing that this game does, because I think it understands. It understands it's like, oh, people expect more. And it's not handhold tutorial. It's more like, this is weird. Like, this does not make sense for like how people play games, or honestly, how games should be made. But I appreciate what you're saying about the backtracking not feeling like a chore. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the way they do that is adding, and you know, people always talk about Metroidvania, but it's like Zelda has that as well.
Yeah.
It's like you get this ability that's going to allow you to do a thing that you couldn't before. But I think this game, more so than the top-down Zeldas that I can recall, does a good job of giving you abilities that you use in the dungeons, but then also using them in the overworld to allow you to traverse and get through things quicker. There'll be like three little boulders that are blocking your path from the city that you start, or the little town that you start in, and this part that's pretty late in the game, but you pretty quickly get this, the thing that allows you to carry the rocks. Then you can just toss the rocks away and then you can walk through.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't need to go all around the maze to get through the stuff. And it's like,
It's
brilliantly designed to make sure that you're having fun moving throughout the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think they do a great job of that. And then also speaking to like the ways they've modernized it in terms of like gameplay and stuff, along with the keeping the dialogue options, are the telephone houses also new?
No, those are in there.
Okay, because I was like, if that was new, I was gonna say that was a great addition to like help me figure out where in the world I need to go. But once again, like overall, like really cool game, really cool art style. It's Nintendo in the way that like, you know, immediately like entering into this world, I was like, I love this already. Right, this is pulling the heartstrings in terms of the music, in terms of how the characters look, and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. It's un-Nintendo in terms of the frame rate stuff, but also it is Nintendo in terms of the fact that Breath of the Wild had frame rate issues when you got to like the Lost Woods, mm-hmm. and so like, yeah, that's kind of bringing it down for me, but it's not ruining it for me by any means.
One of the things that impresses me the most and excites me the most about this game is the level of quality and uniqueness it hit with its style. And Grezzo, the developers that made it and kind of made the remake, they also made the Majora's Mask and Ocarina of Time 3D remakes on the 3DS. And those were killer. Like, they did such a good job kind of keeping the game the same, but updating it looks way better. Like, they're the definitive ways to play those games. And seeing this, it's such a drastic leap from that. And it reminds me a lot of Bluepoint. Where we constantly are talking about Bluepoint and we associate them with Sony, even though they could do whatever they want. But like, we associate them with Sony, where it's like, oh, they're going to remake these games, and like, they are the guys to go to for these big experiences. But we ask, like, when are they going to make their own thing? Like, they have all of this under their belt.
Yeah.
When are they going to do it themselves? And I think Grezzo's close to that too, where it's like, we're seeing this for Nintendo. And that's exciting to me. They can keep making remakes of games, and if the quality's this high, I'm going to be there the entire way through, but I believe that they can do something really special.
If you had to choose, what would you want them to create next? Or recreate next, I should say.
If it's just remake, if a new thing's not an option?
Because
honestly, a new Zelda would be my answer.
Oh, yeah.
A new 2D top-down Zelda pretty cool. From them.
They just get to make their original one.
Mm. Yeah, like similar to what we saw with Oracle of Ages and Seasons back on Game Boy Color, where Capcom came in. And like, that's weird. You know what I mean? But totally. It's like, let's get weird with Nintendo properties. Like, God, there's been so much Zelda. I love it. because we've seen a lot of great results from that. Like, we haven't gotten a new top-down Zelda. I guess we got Link Between Worlds.
Yeah.
Can
I ask a question right there in that vein?
Yes.
Am I going to... Will I like Link's Awakening? I have it on my Switch. I have it ready to go. I was super stoked. There's been a million games out, yada, yada, yada. But I'm similar. Like, I don't have an affinity as a Sega kid for classic Zeldas. Ocarina was my first one. I tried to do a Link to the Past multiple times. It never clicked for me. And then when Link Between Worlds came out, I played it and loved it on our flight to Australia.
Yeah.
But that was like a more modern take on that, right?
Yeah, you know, you can love this game.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of things that can frustrate you to you just being like, I'm done with this. And I think that would be a disservice knowing you. There are things that I don't want to spoil.
Okay.
Little moments that I think that you would really, really appreciate with characters, and you start to care a lot more. Like, I care more about the characters in Link's Awakening than characters in any Zelda game, honestly.
Okay.
With the exception, I like the champions a lot. But Link's Awakening, there's just something special about the world, and especially with this art style that feels great.
Yeah.
I would recommend, though, don't have shame looking up a wiki.
But see, this is where I'm getting into problem territory with the game, is that my plan was similar to Link Between Worlds, was to save it until our flight to London.
Yeah.
The meet and greet. I'm fucking 40,000 feet in the air and I'm like, what the fuck does it want me to?
Here's the thing though, is like, this is a small game. It's a Game Boy game.
Yeah.
Like, it would not be hard for you.
So think small.
I have no fucking shame. There's a Polygon wiki that is fantastic. Like a walkthrough that it would just be a couple screenshots on your phone that, like, just for you to have.
Okay.
And, like, because it's not that much. It's, like, the directions are pretty clear. Once you know what you need to do, it's, like, oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the thing, too.
It clicks. It's
always,
like, I get
it. Always just, like, one step of, like, oh, no, I need to go talk to this witch, and now I have the thing.
I got to talk to this witch.
Now, yeah. But I didn't play on the plane for that exact reason, because I was, like, I know for a fact I'm going to get frustrated. I'm going to need a wiki in order to, like, get through the part that I'm at right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
But I also think that this game does a good job of... It's linear. You're definitely like, there's a path that you're supposed to be going down, but it always does a good job of giving you enough to do that even if you get stuck on the main thing, there's other areas you can go to that you have enough equipment to get through. It might be a little bit more challenging than if you had the Pegasus boots to let you run fast or whatever, but you can still do it. And I feel like even if you get stuck, there's rewarding things that you can find. But I do think you like it. I can also see you pretty quickly getting frustrated. But it's a great game. A lot of issues, but I can't wait to see what they do next.
Okay.
I didn't answer your question, though, about what I want. I would love Oracle of Ages and Seasons.
Ooh, that'd be cool.
Like, I love those games. Those were, if I remember correctly, those were the first Zelda games I actually beat growing up. So I think that they can do something really special with that, especially if they combined them into one game and added the third scenario in there. Did you ever play through these?
I did not, no.
Oh, they're awesome.
Yeah?
Yeah. Oracle of Ages, very similar games. But Oracle Ages was more puzzle based.
Mm-hmm.
Seasons was more action based.
Were these Game Boy Color or
Game Boy Color games?
Okay,
yeah, it was following the Pokemon thing of the red and blue.
Yeah,
and then but if you played both of them, you can use a link cable, and then it gave you like link a third cable. Final like DLC pack essentially. Yeah, shout out to the link cable.
Yeah.
Also, shout out to Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Yeah, dude.
You've been playing that?
I've been playing Sayonara Wild Hearts, and I've been really enjoying it, actually. I think it's a really cool game. If you're unfamiliar, it's essentially... it's a game published by Annapurna, developed by Sumogo, and they advertise it as a pop album video game. And so think of what a pop album is, and that's the way the video game is structured. It is on rails... hard to kind of nail down and describe because from level to level, which the levels are separated by tracks, like tracks on a CD, level to level, things change in terms of how the game is played. For the most part, it's on rails, and I know Kevin's bringing it up if you're a video watcher. But yeah, like it has a really cool art style. There's a lot of purples, a lot of pinks, and I believe the narrative is essentially tackling breakups and heartbreak in a very abstract, in a very interesting way.
Yeah, because it starts with you like on like a couch or in bed, right?
Yeah, and like the songs have a very obvious theme of breakup and heartbreak. In fact, there's like multiple songs that are named heartbreak, like it's heartbreak 1, heartbreak 2, heartbreak 3, right? And the more you play, the more you kind of understand exactly like what is going on. Even though I'm on my second or third playthrough right now, and I'm still, you know, trying to piece together, like, okay, what exactly how do I derive meaning from what's happening here?
Yeah, what does this represent?
Yeah.
What's the metaphor?
Because it is very abstract in terms of what's going on. And during my second playthrough, I was like, okay, I am noticing the song tracks here and the song arrangement here, and now it's almost like listening to an album or like a concept album and trying to understand, like, okay, what exactly does this song mean to this album, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you listen to Lupe Fiasco's The Cool or, like, any specific album that is telling a specific story, this game is doing that. I enjoy it. I do have things that I wish this game did better. My main critique would be that when you play the game the way that they kind of set it up for you to be played, right, you go into the menu and you go to start game, it puts you into this level select screen, right, and all the levels are locked except for level one, and so you play level one, which is like the first song. And it's like a minute long, right? You finish it and it pops you back to the menu. And it's like level two, right? And you click that. And after all the levels, it grades you, right? And so you finish level one, it's like you get a B or whatever it is, right? And it pops you back out. Okay, you choose level two, you finish it. And it's like a minute, 2 minutes, right? It's gold, it's ranks. So it's like gold rank, silver rank, bronze rank, right? And you get a gold rank, right? It pops you back out, right? And you do this over and over and over again. And it really, for me, ruined the flow of the game where I think. On first listen of an album, right, you kind of, and this might be like a snobby music listener thing, but I feel like you'd want to listen to an album front to back.
The whole way through.
Yeah, without like
repeating stuff.
Yeah, because like imagine if you were on Spotify and after you finish the song, the album stopped and you'd have to go back into the menu and then press play on the next song. Like, that's not how you want to listen to an album. You want to listen to it from front to back, and then after you listen to it, then you want to go back and pick and choose, like, okay, I want to play this specific song because I really like this song, right? Speaking of which, my favorite song from this game is probably Begin Again. I think it's called Begin Again. And also Mine is really good. But yeah, like, it is weird because if you go into extras, they do have what they call arcade mode, which does the thing of, hey, we're not going to pop you back out anymore. We're not going to grade you anymore. You are just going to experience this game from front to back. Hmm. And the game is only like an hour and a half, maybe 2 hours, like somewhere in that range, depending on how much you die. And yeah, it's so weird to me that the foot that they led on was the foot of, yeah, we're going to pop you back out to the level select screen, and we're going to grade you on each level, because I feel like that's not the way the game's meant to be played, first and foremost.
Yeah, from the demos I had done of it, right? I still haven't played the final cut. That was what I got out of it, is that it was meant to be like, I'm jamming to music, and the game isn't secondary, right?
Yeah.
But it's not the main purpose here, is that it's like this colorful, playable music video almost, right?
Yeah. And that was the thing. Like, I played this game at PAX East, and I was blown away, and I was very excited for it. And while playing through my first playthrough, I was like, why is this not working for me the same way? Like, why is this game not hitting me that same way? And I think what it was I realized that, yeah, the way that it kind of chops it up by popping you back out doesn't necessarily work. Now, like, as far as like the gameplay, the game does really unique things, right? It's on rails. There are times where you are, and I don't want to spoil too much of it because the game really is about experiencing what is happening here, right? It's pop music. You go in, you're on rails, and you're dodging obstacles. At some points, you're shooting obstacles. At some points, you're doing these various things. But it stays basic for the most part, and it is very much like, okay, you're playing an on rails game from beginning to end. My one critique with the on-rails portions of the game is the fact that you are following the girl you're playing as, and the camera kind of zooms and pans and is all over the place, which at some points makes it very difficult to tell where you are at on the rail. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
so,
I noticed that, because you're collecting the hearts, right? And you feel like you're lined up, and you skate right past
them. Yeah, you're collecting the hearts like coins in Mario, right? Where, yeah, that's kind of how you accrue points. And yeah, you're controlling the girl, and then yeah, once the camera kind of pans or winds or does whatever, you can lose yourself, and then you can run into a wall, or you could the main way you are losing this game is by running into a wall. So you could run into a wall, or you can get shot by an enemy, or you can miss a certain jump or whatever, and that'll lead to your death. And so the camera at some points got in the way of that. And aesthetically, like, it works aesthetically, it looks really cool, but that does hinder the gameplay just a tad bit. Overall, though, I've really enjoyed Sayonara Wild Hearts. I was playing it again right before walking in here, just because, you know, it's one of those games that you can just put on and just replay and just feels right, right? It is a very replayable game. It's a very enjoyable game, because, yeah, it's especially if you love music, especially if you like to kind of just sit back and relax and play video games at a casual pace. It's definitely a game that works for that. I played it on Switch. I know it's on Apple Arcade also.
Do you think it would work on Apple Arcade?
I would think that it would work on Apple Arcade, even though from what I've heard, it sounds like it doesn't work as well as it could. I don't know if you've played it on Apple Arcade yet, Greg.
I haven't yet, no.
Yeah, from the people who I've heard who have played it on Apple Arcade, they seem to say that Switch might be the better place to play it. And I don't know why, because like...
Sticks, man.
Maybe it is the sticks, because yeah, you kind of do have to have that tight control.
Oh, yeah, you do.
Yeah, even though like it's... The gameplay is basic enough where I feel like touch controls, it's not like all the face buttons are doing anything, right? Mm-hmm. I think you're using one face button in this game and the analog stick. But I think, yeah, that control of the analog stick probably lends itself to feeling better to play.
That's why I got to sync your controllers now to your iPad and your iPhone.
You
yeah.
There you go. Speaking of touch controls not working, I've been playing Mario Kart Tour.
Oh! Ooh.
And let me tell you, man, I tweeted yesterday, I'm finding it really hard to find things that I like about this game.
Mm.
I found a couple things I like about them. I think that the maps are very well designed for the type of gameplay that is there. It's crazy seeing a lot of classic Mario Kart levels looking arguably better than they ever have. They've been adapted for the vertical style of gameplay.
And I don't know how it controls.
Poorly.
So, yeah, but is it swiping? Is it, you know, two fingers?
I'll get to that in just a second. Because visually, I want to give this game a shout out. It is, especially on an OLED iPhone, it looks great. Mm-hmm. Mario Kart Deluxe, and even before that, Mario Kart 8, are years old at this point, right? So it's like cool to kind of see like, oh, where could Nintendo be taking this? Because they're levels we've seen before, but also levels we haven't seen before. Seeing levels based off New Donk City in Odyssey is cool. It's kind of like a fun tease of like, oh man, like we haven't seen new Mario Kart stuff in a while, right? Yeah. It's also weird to see Mario Kart levels that aren't focused on the Mario Kart 8 gravity flipping and stuff.
Sure.
It is a bit more, okay, we're back to just the
ground,
the ground level. There's still the, you know, underwater and over stuff, but it's like not the flippy dippy stuff. Sure. So just the visuals and all that stuff, very cool. The way that the cups are set up, I find pretty interesting. They're each one you go through, you play three different levels or three different maps, and they are two laps each to try to keep it quicker, which I appreciate. I feel like if it was three laps, it would be a little bit too long for how this game controls. Two is the right amount. One would have been too short. Three would have been too much. Two, I do feel, is right. But you play through one level, and then there's like the fourth level is like a bonus challenge that tries to teach you something else about the game, like drifting, better drifting. So like you have to go through these different hoops or like collect this amount of coins or jump off this many things, and you go and you get the coins. So far in the game, I'm constantly getting enough gold stars or whatever to unlock the next Grand Prix to like keep going without having to buy any microtransactions.
Okay.
You start the game, you have nothing. They give you these rubies.
The game of life.
You use the rubies to do the little loot crate thing, which is the warp pipe. Shoot the pipe.
Everybody's excited about shooting the pipe, I hear.
And it gives you get assigned a character, you get assigned a cart, you get assigned whatever, and it's just like, it's random. I got Toadette as my first one, and so I was using her for a while, and then as you go, you unlock more rubies, you use them on the loot crate thing, and then eventually you get more. I got my boy Koopa Troopa, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Okay, good.
Each character has their own special moves and blah, 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 and all that stuff. That's kind of the extent of the nice things I have to say about it. Mm. It controls horribly in any option that there is to control. There is the default, which is kind of the casual mode, where you're holding the phone, it's one finger, it's vertical, and you move left, you move right, it just turns them left or right. They are constantly accelerating. There's no going back. There's no slowing down. There's no stopping.
Drifting? Am I drifting?
It's going in casual mode, barely. Mm-hmm. You kind of can, but it's a little more difficult. Hmm. You're just moving. All you're doing is deciding left and right, and there's like an arrow in front of your cart that's showing you where you're going to go.
Okay.
This arrow is absolutely necessary to have any type of control over what you're doing, because it's so easy to overshoot where you're going. Mm-hmm. If you hold long enough, you do eventually activate a turbo or a drift, and then you get the turbo. It's Mario Kart, right? You move down to how I assume most people play this game, where it's not the casual mode. You lose the arrow, but it's auto drift. As you're turning left and right, it initiates a drift immediately, and it's definitely the more advanced way to play. The more advanced way to play, you can turn on motion controls, gyro. So it's you're going left and right with the auto drift with motion controls determining where you're turning. None of these work well, and they definitely do not work well in conjunction with each other. I have found the most success going down to the casual, just because that arrow is super helpful and allows me to just kind of cruise. And there's all these other guys doing all this fancy drifting and stuff, but it doesn't matter. I'm still getting first.
Mm-hmm. Wow,
I'm still getting through. And it seems like a lot of people have been having this issue where it's like they're constantly just getting first. It's like everyone seems to be winning, and it's like,
is it online?
Huh. So it makes you think that it is for a while.
Oh.
And it's not until later. So you're playing through, and it's against computers, but it's making it look like you're playing against humans. There's characters, and a lot of their names are like their usernames are like Japanese characters and stuff. So it's kind of making you feel like, oh shit, I'm playing against people. No, you're not. Like, If I was playing against people, I wouldn't be able to pause or skip the cutscenes or do this. Like, but I can, so that's weird. You eventually get through enough. Like, I played for maybe an hour. You get through enough Grand Prix that you unlock a thing where you are playing against people, I think.
I thought you weren't.
And at this point, maybe not. But, like, it phrased it in a way where it's like you're now doing something different. The game is changing where it's not just about beating things. It's about beating things over and over and over and playing a certain amount of these Grand Prix in a certain amount of time frame to be able to move on and to unlock more and go. And it's like, oh my God, this is a mobile game in all the worst ways. And this is proof of Nintendo just being going in there and being like, yo, there's a lot of money we can make here. We just need to do this thing and it'll make money. And that's what this game is. It's going to make a lot of money. People are going to download Mario Kart. Mario Kart, one of the most mainstream success stories in video games. Everybody knows Mario Kart. Everyone wants to play Mario Kart. Even more so than Super Mario Run. And that was a different thing. That was $10. This is free to play. People are going to get it. People are going to get hooked. And people are going to waste a lot of money. And it's sad, honestly, because I think that Mario Kart is one of the franchises that could have worked best on mobile. Don't play gimmicks. Give me it horizontal, even if it was just, even if it was vertical. Change the controls so it's the tap left and right, so you can hold it with two hands and decide to go left or right. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that makes sense. I played it a little bit this morning and literally just now during the show, and I was using the drift option, and it is pretty difficult to control. I'm surprised by, like, I feel like it looks pretty good as far as, like, it looks like Mario Kart.
It looks great.
Yeah.
Like, it looks like a new Mario Kart.
Yeah, and so, like, that kind of shocked me. I don't know why I was expecting it to look like crap, but it looked good. But yeah, so far I have Mario Kart 8 Deluxe on my Switch, and so I don't know why I would play this.
One-handed.
I don't know. One-handed, but
no multiplayer. You are not playing against humans at all.
Really?
I mean, they're doing their best to make you think that you are.
This is GameSpot. Yeah, you can't play against them, and a multiplayer feature is grayed out in the main menu with the promise of inbound. Compounding the confusion is the fact that the game is online only, and you appear to be playing multiplayer against strangers all the time. But Nintendo has confirmed to GameSpot that it only has single-player features at launch. So your opponents are actually bots with player-like usernames.
It's weird. And, like,
they're
on top
to pull
of that,
a fast one.
As you get further, there's a moment that it's like, it feels like, oh, it's like, oh, now you're graduating to the big leagues. And you're like, the game feels like it's tricking you a lot. And it's like, that's not a good thing, especially from Nintendo. It's like, you could have done something that really kind of revolutionized what mobile games could be using some of the most valuable IP in the world. And this ain't it. Like, it's really not. And I think that time and time again now, we've seen Nintendo's iOS titles and Android titles too. Kind of do this and, like, be either too shallow or too deep with shady tactics involved. And I kind of just want to see what a real quality game could look like from them, because I know that they can do it. But, like I said,
will they ever do it?
But mobile games that are doing it, Greg, Apple Arcade, you want to talk about Mini Mortar Race and Assemble with Care?
That's right. Of course, my Apple Arcade addiction continues to go on. Still totally and helplessly addicted to Grindstone. Having a great time with that. I finally got into the grinding of it, if that makes sense, right? Because before we talked about it, you match all the colors, you go through, you do your thing. Now it is the thing of, all right, cool, well, I don't have the treasure chest in this. I haven't beaten the king in this. I'll go back and do it. Well, I don't want to invest in more hearts right now. You have to pay for it, but you can get one. Pay for it with in-game gems. So I'll just keep grinding the same level over and over to get gems, to get materials, do all this different stuff. Aside from that, though, Assemble with Care. From us too, the folks who brought you Monument Valley. This one, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's been a buzz about it in terms of what it is, right? A narrative-based little game here that's telling you this really adorable story. I didn't cry at the end of it, right? And the way I've described it is, it's kind of like the Puzzles of Florence. It's not Florence. It is not doing that. It is not the same kind of thing. Mm. But it's the same idea of, you are this character, Maria. You are a repair woman. You are on this giant travel journey. You come to a new town. You want to go to the food festival they're about to have, but you need to make some bank. So you pass out flowers that you're there to repair stuff. People keep bringing their objects from their broken relationships for you to repair, that then give you a window into what's happening in their relationship. So there's these two sisters that are having some rough times. You help them out, right? There's his dad and his daughter. You do some stuff and you get more and more about them. And so it's this idea of, like, you know, the daughter brings you a broken tape recorder. And so then you, the gameplay is, like, you get the narrative beforehand. There's, like, a couple little drawings of it. There's all the text the woman is saying with lovely VO. She goes through and tells you what's happening, tells you the story. The other characters pop in with their dialogue. Then you're given the gameplay, though, the puzzle, which isn't really a great way to describe it, but the assembly of this game. And you have the tape recorder, and you have your little tool bag, and you can spin the tape recorder, you know, in three dimensions. And then you go in there and, you know, you take the screws out with your screwdriver. Then you pop off the back. Then there's all the, you know, the electronics on the inside. You take that apart. You spread it all out. And you do this with, you know, a music box with a neon sign. All these different things that you take apart and figure out, okay, this is broken. Put it there. Well, if I bring this over here and do it, well, I have to connect the wires. It's all these little puzzles and challenges that aren't that challenging. It took me, like, you know, I think the whole game. It was my flight to LA the other day when I went down to play Last of Us. Played it the entire way there and rolled credits as we were taxiing, you know, to the gate or whatever. It's fun. The narrative is great. You want to know why the relationships are the way they are and how you can help fix them. It's them telling you a story with then this little mix of gameplay in there of you going through and fixing these things. And by the end, when you're fixing the final objects for the people, that's when I was like, I'm not going to cry. And I didn't. I just teared up a lot. But really well done. It's a really good story. It's a really great game. Another reason I think that Apple Arcade's awesome, right? Of like, here's this game that would have been, you know, whatever. It's $5 for the entire Netflix library, let alone a free month of it to jump in.
Do you feel like an Apple Arcade game is probably going to penetrate your top 10 for the year?
I do.
Yeah?
I think Grindstone already has. Like, I think Grindstone will already be on my top 10 list of games to play this year. I think it's just magnificent. It's a great game. It's got that hook to it. It's, you know, it's got hooks in it that is, hey, here's why it's a casual mobile game, right? But then it's also the thing of, here's why it's a game for gamers of, I can do this. I'm going to redo this. I'm just going to grind it out to get the gems, to have a gem stockpile to go on and do the hard stuff. I think, like, you're going to see more and more of that stuff.
And that's why that Mario Kart Tour coming out
for the same price.
So close to Apple Arcade. And yeah, for the same price as the entire Apple Arcade, you get the ticket that honestly is, I mean, if the game played better, it's enticing as hell. It's like, that would be a thing where, like, what they're offering, I'd love if the game went faster. 200cc, it's like, yeah, let's go.
Yeah.
If it controlled well. Mm-hmm. But the level and speed at which they give you if you have that thing, I'm like, that's a game. That's a game there. I don't want to pay $5 a month, especially for this, but it's like, man, if Nintendo had worked with Apple to make it part of Apple Arcade and made, like, hey, we're making a freaking Mario Kart game for that, I think it could have been something special.
What are the chances you think Nintendo takes influence from Apple Arcade and just makes Nintendo Arcade on mobile, or like Nintendo, I don't know, mobile eShop or something like that?
I think it's very unlikely.
Yeah.
I think that they see this as money. They see it as like, hey, this is a way that we're just going to, like, we're going to do the gotcha thing. Mm-hmm. And they're going to make a lot of money from it. Mm. Next game.
Other game is Mini Motorways. This is from Dinosaur Polo Club. They did Mini Metro. Mini Metro is a game I saw at a PAX East forever ago and was super excited for it. And then I was a PC game at the time, and it was probably iOS as well. But I just totally never got around to it. Of course, Apple Arcade now. Why not get around to it? I'm super excited. Mini Motorways is now so hard. It's competing so hard with Grindstone for my time. It's really based on, do I have a coffee? I'm going to play Grindstone because it's one hand. And do I have two hands, or now the iPad? iPad iOS is out now that has Apple Arcade on it. And that was my one negative for Mini Motorways, is that I think it works better. I needed a bigger screen for it. Mini Motorways is basically SimCity without all the bullshit, if you will. You have a grid-based thing. They put down a red big building, right? Then there's a little red house, and you have to connect the roads to connect them over there, right? Every tile on the thing is one of your pieces of road cards. If you make it through an entire week, you get 20 more road cards to put down more roads. And every time you make it through a week, the city keeps expanding, the playable area. As you go, of course, it's no longer, it's red buildings and blue buildings and yellow buildings and gray buildings, and it keeps getting more and more complicated as there's more and more things. And then, you know, you unlock bridges at the end. Like, your week will end, you get the extra cards, and then you get a choice. Do you want a traffic light, or do you want more cards for the road? Do you want a traffic light, or do you want an expressway? Do you want a bridge? All these different things to put in your toolbox to make your city expand smartly. What I've loved about it is when it started, I'm like, oh, what a, you know, quaint idea, right? A cute little idea. And I'm connecting the houses to the buildings, right? And then going on. And it's about, there's, you know, cars obviously driving on the roads, delivering people where they are. Where the challenge of the gameplay becomes is all these people are on these roadways trying to get to their different buildings. You have to be on the lookout for traffic jams to put the stoplight there to make it better. What'll happen is you'll see eventually there's, you know, all these little black pings that are like, hey, we want to have people go to this building, or people get out of that building, like an Uber thing, right? Mm-hmm. And if that turns into a circle and starts filling in, if the circle completes, then you fail and the game's over. And it's basically a how long can you last thing? How long can you keep your city going? Similar to SimCity, you can pause the gameplay, like the week clock, so then you could actually sit there, strategize, think cool about moving stuff around. You're then, you know, your score at the end is how many people got to their successful places and so on and so forth. what I've enjoyed about it, jumping in blindly, knowing that I liked the idea of Mini Metro, never even played it, just jumping into this one, knowing it is, it's that idea of the eureka moments of, cool, I'm connecting the red house to the, you know, red building. And then when you add more, you're like, oh, well, like, in city planning, roads don't dead end into houses, right? You have the road, and you put the house in, like, a driveway coming into the road, perpendicular. So having that thing, and then when I started actually, like, not trying to play reactionary to it, but okay, instead, you can, once you put down a tile of a road, you can delete it at any time and then get it back in your inventory and put it back out. So it was that thing of, like, actually laying down grid infrastructure like New York, right? Of, like, wait, I'm going to try to get ahead of the problem. And then things start sprouting up and actually automatically connecting. And then when there are little ones, okay, wait, blow it all up. Let's pause it. Let's delete this. Let's do this and shift that. Like, it's a fun challenge for somebody who loves SimCity, you know, to get in there and have it be a smaller focus, but even more complicated in a lot of ways. Because now it is like, well, shit, everybody's coming off the expressway and running into a traffic jam here. And then it's like, how do I even fix that? I don't know yet. I don't know. Yeah. I've never thought about the actual traffic flow of things. How do I connect people across a river to get them here closer? I just keep playing the LA map over and over and over again, trying to figure it out. Having a great time.
Awesome. Before we go, there's two listener mail questions I wanted to get to with you, Bless. Nanobiologist writes in. He says, hey, Blessing. After being a fan and now a part of the Kind of Funny Games production cycle for a couple days, how do you think they can improve Kind of Funny Games Daily and Kind of Funny Games Cast? What lessons have you learned from them that people may not think about when it comes to how the sausage is made that you will implement for your own shows and think everyone can benefit from knowing? Thanks, and you have earned a new subscriber to OK Beast for your stellar work this week.
Oh,
buddy.
Thank you. Wow, that is a lot. I don't know. I feel like Games Daily and Games Cast are good in the sense that they both fulfill their own specific, you know, role, you know, Games Daily for video game news and Games Cast for impressions. And so, like, I mean, the feedback I give is feedback that I feel like you guys are already have already been taking as far as bringing on more voices, because, like, you know, there's a big world out there as far as, like, people who play video games and people that have things to say about video games, right? And so bringing on Imran and Fran, I was going to call him Frank for some reason. Frank. Bringing them on, I think it has done a great thing as far as, like, you know, Fran is very knowledgeable about these live service games like Destiny and Borderlands and others, right? And so I think that brings a different dimension to the show, along with, you know, Imran having that having his voice and being able to speak about how he feels, right, and bringing that different flavor on. I feel like you guys have been doing a really great job of doing that, right? I mean, even bringing me on for the week. And yeah, Games Daily, I mean, as far as, like, things that people don't know about, like, as far as, like, production goes, did Kevin fall? Is he okay?
No, that's...
Oh, okay. First guy, I was like, is he okay? I think, you know, A learning thing for me was that, reporting on video games news, or not even reporting, discussing video games news daily is a lot harder than it seems, because, you know, the fact that we're daily means that oftentimes you're the first opinion out there, right? You're the first voice out there, and that means they're kind of leading the charge as far as, like, you know, talking about these things and actually, like, talking about these things live, right? Not just composing a tweet or you know, getting to sit down and write an article, right? You're having to talk about it in front of people and get into deep discussions about things that might even still be breaking. And so that can be kind of intimidating and kind of difficult, or more difficult than people even realize. I don't know if that covered most or all of the question. Yeah. Is there anything I'm missing out there?
That was great, man. Cool. Thank you, nanobiologist. And then the final question comes from the anonymous moose. I like it. Hey, Blessing, fantastic job this week. If Kind of Funny were to do the up-and-comer program again, who do you think are people that you would recommend for the game side of things?
For the game side of things, Snowack Mike, number one. I freaking love Snowack Mike. Like, I met him quite a few times. I think the first time was probably at a KFL or KF prom, but I actually met and hung out with him at RTX. And, you know, the more I've gotten to know him, gotten to know his content, that dude is super talented. I don't know how he's able to, you know, present in the way that he presents and come off as so professional and be able to, you know, kill it with his Twitch streams and do such a great, phenomenal job. And so still Mike for sure. Game side. There's so many people. I mean, Alex O'Neill. You know, I think he does a great job. He does a very similar thing as me that I do with OK Beast. Him and Irrational Passions, they probably do even more because they have like a whole editorial team. They put out articles, they put out impressions, they put out videos, they do all that stuff, and they do it very consistently and very well. And then, man, who else?
Per Schneider.
I guess Per Schneider. Yeah, I feel like he needs a shot. I think he would have do a great job. He was able to come up here for a week and have a voice. Yeah. Emmett Watkins Jr.
Hell yeah, man.
I freaking love Emmett Watkins Jr.
He's fantastic.
Yeah, I think he definitely deserves a shot with how passionate he is about video games. He does a lot of like sort of like what you see Wario 64 do, or like Nibel, right, where he tweets or maybe not Nibel, but he tweets deals. I think I was thinking of Cheap Ass Gamer. Tweets deals, tweets, has a lot of good opinions on Twitter, does a lot of great stuff there. And so,
big fan of Dreams. To me, I would say he is like the de facto. Like, if you're looking for quality Dreams content, he's the guy.
That's
to
where
follow.
You go.
Yeah. No, for sure. And then, yeah. I would just start listing, but I don't want to miss anybody.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Awesome, man. Great. Well, thank you very much for being here. Hopefully, we can have you back one day here on the Kinda Funny Games cast.
Please do.
Where can people find you?
Of course, you can find me on Twitter at Blessing Jr. And check out the OK Beast podcast. That is OK Beast's weekly gaming show, similar to this. On that show, we do news, topical discussions, impressions of games, very similar stuff that Kinda Funny does. And so the OK Beast podcast, that's available on your streaming service of choice.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, until next week, I love you. It's time for the post show.